You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
I hope everyone had a good Halloween. We do a thing in our family. Our kids are 10 and 8, and we learned about this from other parents when we moved here. It's called the Switch Witch. Maybe you've heard of it. We thought it was so brilliant. The Switch Witch is a witch who comes to your house after Halloween and takes all the candy away and replaces it with some sort of toy. And, you know, for a parent who's kind of horrified at what their kids are bringing home, this seems pretty great. So we first heard about this maybe five years ago. And we went home to our kids and we said, you know, some families do this thing. It's called the Switch Witch. And we kind of explained it and said, do you guys want to do the Switch Witch? And they said, sure, that's a great idea. And it did not occur to either of us, because we're naive, that our kids believed that there was a witch who would do this switch. We thought we were being fairly plain about what was going to happen. You know, it was kind of very, it was very wink, wink. We were wrong. It became very clear the morning of that a witch had visited the house and brought a toy. And so then the next year, when it comes up again, we say, do you want to do the Switch Witch? It's, first of all, of course, yes, because this is magical. And then you start to hear them speculating about, well, how does the witch, because it's optional, right? So how does the Switch Witch know who's opting in and who's opting out? And we're listening to this, and it's, and we're realizing that we've stepped into a kind of a big lie. And it seemed harmless. And then a couple of years ago, when my son figured out Santa Claus, that led to a very big conversation. And you could see everything tumbling away in one moment. He figured out Santa, and then he figured out the Tooth Fairy, and then his eyes got really big. And he said, it was so dark. He said, what about the Switch Witch? And I said, yeah, the Switch Witch. I said, we actually never thought that you would think that was real anyway. That seems so ludicrous. And you could see him do the math very quickly. And he's like, so where does it go? And I explained, I take it to work. And he was so horrified. Losing Santa was a big deal. But there was a betrayal in the Switch Witch that went pretty deep. And this year, it just happened again. And our daughter still is 100% in. She believes in the Switch Witch completely. And our son is able to kind of roll with it. He knows it's funny. I bring all this up partly because, well, so we've been talking about the precepts. And the first three, do not kill, do not steal, do not misuse sexuality. And then we arrive at number four, and number four is do not lie. Or just not lying. And when I think about this one, where I land, or maybe the opposite, where I find it difficult to kind of land is how wrapped up this one is in everything. Why do we lie? To someone else or to ourselves? Why do we do it? It's not that complicated. In almost every case, we do it to protect ourselves from something. we're trying to control the world in a particular way. We're trying to control an encounter or a conversation or a relationship, right? We're not going to let it go off the rails. We're going to say, no, you look great. You look great. Because we're not quite sure what's on the other side of you don't look great, right? So we protect this, whatever this is. And sometimes it's as innocuous as that. And sometimes it's really big. I think there's a scene that we've seen in a lot of movies or we've read in a lot of books in which someone comes to terms with some sort of repressed memory. You know, the one that comes to mind for me is the Bourne Identity. Right? So much of these movies are about him not... He knows there's something he's supposed to remember, but he doesn't remember it. And then finally, it all comes to him and he realizes he killed a man for no reason. And he has to face that. And it's so painful. And it's often so dramatic in terms of the content that we as viewers can sit back and say, whew, I've never had anything like that. But part of what I find so jarring about a scene like that is that I have had experiences like that. I've had experiences, not I didn't wake up and discover that I killed a man, but I have had moments where, with no real catalyst, some veil has fallen from my eyes and I realize that a story I've told myself for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years was not true. Not because I got new information, but because something just kind of hit me right. And I realize, oh, I've been willfully telling myself my entire adult life that in that moment I was the good guy. Because I needed to believe that I was the good guy. And suddenly the camera angle switches and I see it. I see what was always there. I wasn't kind in that moment. I wasn't selfless in that moment. I just spun it for me. It might be a story I've never even told another person, but it's a story that mattered. But to go back to what I was saying earlier, this one is particularly sticky because, as in everything in this practice, we're talking often about honesty, right? About looking at things as they really are, not in some varnished way. And that obviously applies to the precepts. So if you want to take up the practice, for example, of not stealing, where we're asked this question of what has really been offered to you and what are you just taking? That requires a kind of radical honesty on our part. Not just a clear seeing, but an ability to be with ourselves and really see what our intentions are, see what our machinations are behind our eyes. And so in order to practice the second precept, you have to also be practicing the fourth precept. Of not lying. That's not easy, but it's simple enough. Of course we have to do that. Where I think it gets really interesting is that in order to practice the fourth precept, you have to practice the fourth precept. In order to not lie, you have to find a way to not lie to yourself about lying. You have to get behind yourself somehow and see what might draw you toward a particular lie. Why do I lie to my kids about the Switch Witch? Now, I like this example because I can say that it's because I'm a really good dad and I don't want my kids to eat the 65 bags of cheese sticks that they got the other night and the Smarties and the whatever. And I genuinely don't want them to. It's horrible. It's not just the stuff. It's the normalizing of it, right? I don't want my kids to think that this is ever a right way to live. So I'm trying to kind of save them in my mind. But I'm aware, protecting myself from all sorts of things, right? Because what if I just took it away? What if I said, well, you can go trick-or-treating because that's fun, but I'm just, as a dad, I'm not going to let you have this stuff. The outcome would be the same for them, you know, gastrointestinally. But the outcome for me would be, instead of me being a conduit to a magical being who brings a toy, I'm a jerk. Right? They get to go to school and say, the Switch Witch came. Instead of going to school and saying, my dad is a horrible guy. Right? Or what if I just said, well, we don't do Halloween. Right? Or what if I said, yeah, you can do all that, but then we're going to carefully manage how you dole this out to yourself over the course of whatever, right? All of these situations, to me, are incredibly inconvenient. And so I ride this lie that seems to be serving me very, very well. I have a good friend, her daughter is maybe 4 or 5, and she went a completely different way. Just the other day, her daughter went to her and said, is the tooth fairy real or pretend? And my friend stared at her daughter for a long time because she knew this was a big moment. And she said, pretend. And her daughter said, okay. And my friend asked, did you want her to be real? And her daughter said, yeah, I did. And they just sat in that. It's kind of heartbreaking, but it's also kind of beautiful, right? There was a bravery in that, I think, for both of them. They both faced something. I'm not trying to come out on one side of that argument or the other, but I want to be honest that when I weave this story about the reasons why I do something, I know there's another story behind the story. There's always another story behind the story. And I don't want to fall into this other story about where we look for the exceptions. Right? Aren't there some lies that we tell that are genuinely selfless? Yes, and the Buddha laid it out. He told stories about this, right? If you're harboring a fugitive and somebody comes and knocks on the door and they say, send him out because we're going to kill him right here, and you say, I don't know what you're talking about, he's not here. The Buddha said, that's fine. You do that. That's a lie that it serves the greater good, right? You've saved a life. But that fishing around for the exception, that doesn't help, right? All of this practice, whether we're talking about this precept or any other, is about, again, really looking at what you're doing in a painful way, in a kind of naked, raw, vulnerable way, and living with whatever the answer is to your question, even if you hate that answer, even if that answer paints you in a way that you don't ever want to imagine yourself, you start from that honest place. And so, just to come full circle, how do we do that? How do we get honest about being honest? I think that it hinges on this recognition of the self-protection part, right? We protect ourselves, and when we protect ourselves, we kind of contract, right? We make ourselves guarded. That's the idea. And so the antidote to that is to consciously, deliberately let those boundaries go. To let yourself become a little bit porous, right? To let yourself be vulnerable in all the ways that we're vulnerable. So it isn't just about being honest with yourself. It's also about, you know, letting yourself cry at a movie instead of fighting that back. You feel whatever you're supposed to feel. You acknowledge whatever that is without trying to color it as something else. And then you take that skill to looking at how you react to stories. And you start to notice that you have an instinct to change stories. And you change stories in ways that feed you. I want to acknowledge, too, because of my temperament, my instinct is to tell stories in a way that make me look good. Because that feeds me. I want to be someone who's the good guy. But it's exactly the same thing for many people whose instinct is to make themselves the bad guy. Right? So that in every story, they're the villain. They're the responsible party. Not because that makes them feel good, but because it feeds a deeper story about their lives. It's also a lie. Right? It's a lie that becomes the foundation for other lies. It's very easy when we talk about these, and I say this every time. You know, whenever we take up one of these, it feels like we're talking either about all of them or we're talking about this one as if it's the most important one. And that certainly feels like the case with this. I don't know how you can talk about any of them without really getting grounded in this one. Again, not in the most obvious ways, which have to do with, you know, using your mouth to tell lies to other people. That's a side effect of this. But on a deeper level, about lying to yourself, that's the habit to break. If you're not doing that, right, if you're not trying to protect yourself on that level, it won't occur to you to protect yourself on the other level. It's much less scary on the outside than it is on the inside. And that's where I'll stop.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.